Rick, you're making news with an invention that you have dealing with nanotechnology and microelectronics and guitars. So I understand that you've developed a way to make the guitar sound a lot warmer than what it is. Perhaps you could explain that, please.
Well, nanotechnology in this case, it refers to an area called molecular electronics. And the idea of that area, which has been studied worldwide for roughly 15 years, is to put molecules as part of an electronic circuit. And the nano part comes because the device that we make is a single layer of molecules. It may be 3 to 6 nanometers thick, nanometer being a billionth of a meter. So it's a very thin layer of molecules between two electrodes. And it's known as a molecular junction. And it probably has lots of applications beyond music. Its special property is known as quantum mechanical tunneling, and it has to do with the ability of electrons to move across very short distances very efficiently. The guitar came in because one of my associates, one of my colleagues, Adam Berggren, was an amateur guitarist, and he said we should put one of these molecular junctions in a guitar pedal. And what the device does is it changes the harmonics of the sound. And every bit of pop music that you heard has probably been through a couple of these guitar pedals. And they use it to tailor the sound of the electric guitar in that case. So that application is what generated the press release, because that application is now commercial. We're selling them, and they're out there and being used by real guitarists.
So what would this replace in the amplifiers that are already being used by rock musicians?
The rock music world did not embrace standard amplifiers based on silicon electronics. I mean, you can get excellent amplifiers for silicon, but if you play an electric guitar through them, it doesn't have the warmth that people like. The guitar itself doesn't generate the same harmonic distribution that an acoustic guitar would. So a lot of them use vacuum tubes still because they like the sound that produces. But more of them use these so-called overdrive pedals, which takes two silicon diodes typically and uses that to make a nonlinear amplifier, which is a fancy way to say that it distorts the sound a little bit, but it generates these extra harmonics. And, you know, if you listen to a singer singing a G note and a trumpet playing the same note, they're obviously different. And that's because of the harmonics. So the music comes from the harmonics.
Do you understand or do you know why at this time there is such a difference? Like what really accounts for the difference?
We do understand that, yes. The fancy way to put it is it's different physics. And if you look at a standard silicon diode, it's made out of silicon. It's got certain properties. Those properties are hard to change. And the important property in the music case is how the device responds to the input electricity, the waveform coming out of the guitar. And PN junctions, which are the basis of diodes, have a particular response. It's been known for 80 years or so. However, if you put a molecular junction in there, one of our devices, it's got a different response. It's much more gentle than silicon. It doesn't turn on as quickly. It's a gradual, smooth curve, and that gradual, smooth curve is what gives you this richer sound. Silicon devices do introduce harmonics, but they're not as pleasant. And since sound is all subjective, these harmonics are important and pleasing. And so there is a fundamental reason, and the fundamental reason is that silicon is based on a PN junction, and molecular junctions are based on quantum mechanical tunneling. And so it's a different phenomenon. And not only is it different, but we also can change that response very easily by changing the molecular structure or changing the molecular thickness and that sort of thing. Whereas the silicon, you're kind of stuck with silicon because it is what it is, and it's not easy to modify like molecules are.
What would be other applications?
Well, that's what most of my lab is working on, actually. I embraced the guitar because it was a real product, which is of consumer interest, about 1 million guitar pedals sold a year. But what it also represents is a demonstration, shall we say, credibility for the technology. So the patent covers up to the audio range, which is 20 kilohertz, because that's all we can hear. But the devices themselves can go up to very high frequencies, radio frequencies, and much higher than that. So there are a lot of functions for high-frequency devices, some of them involving nonlinear amplification, some of them on fancy things like heterodynes, where you use that speed to do amplification. More generally, chemical sensing is an example of something that you might do with a molecular junction, because silicon doesn't interact with chemicals in any favorable way, usually. But you can make a molecule which does interact with other molecules, such as in drinking water or in blood serum or whatever. So the idea of a chemical sensor based on a molecular electronic device is good. We also can detect light and generate light. Memory devices like flash memory and DRAM, those are sorts of things that it's possible to do with molecules. It might be possible, it remains to be seen, but the power requirements of a molecular device are quite low compared to silicon. It's the tunneling device doesn't use much power, so it may be possible to make very low-power electronics, very cheap electronics. Those things are all the things that drove the development of the field, and this is the first item which has stood the consumer test of being rugged enough for the real world. And I think it's the tip of the iceberg, and the iceberg could be quite large.
Is this device robust?
It certainly is. We've had it running out in the hallway for about a year and 50 billion cycles of current and voltage. We have prototype guitar devices that have been out there for about a year being played by real guitarists, and none of them have failed, at least to our knowledge. So yes, they're quite tough. They're based on different chemistry from what a lot of people use. They're based on carbon-carbon bonds, which are very stable. I mean, that's the bond in diamond and on the heat shield of the space shuttle. Carbon is tough stuff.
So you say that you're already selling these. They are out there in the marketplace. How has the commercialization gone?
Well, it's gone fine. What has been out there for a year was kind of a trial model that was built by a local guitar effects builder known as Dr. Scientist Sounds. And he made 130 pedals that were sold in early 2016. Then we spent a lot of time scaling up and getting a license sorted out for the patents. And that has happened, and the license was completed a couple of weeks ago, and that was what stimulated the press release. Our own commercialization involves a company called Nanolog Audio, and we make the parts in Edmonton, and we also make a pedal that Adam Berggren, my guitar expert, designed. We are now starting to sell those. We had to wait until the license was sorted out before we could. And there's a big trade show starting tomorrow, actually, in Nashville, called National Association of Music Merchants, known as NAMM. And it's the biggest trade show for manufacturers, and so we're going to be there, and we're going to introduce the whole thing there.
So is there a big market for this?
Well, there's about a million guitar pedals sold a year in the U.S. That's approximately $100 million, and probably twice that worldwide. And the big players of that market, Boss and Fender and people like that, they'll be at this show. And they're very interested in buying parts from us. I mean, Nanolog Audio has exclusive rights to using this particular device, the molecular junction, in music instrument applications. So we will sell them, if they want, if they want to make their own pedals that have our device in it, they can do that. We are also making our own pedals, and we sold out of those in about 3 days. We have a limited number available right now, but we're scaling that up.
When you look at the wide range of applications and the research that you have been doing, has this been a big breakthrough?
Well, I would say that the breakthrough was coming up with a device structure that is stable. And that's been going on for 15 years. I mean, our first patents were assigned in approximately 2005. And it took a long time to develop the device. And that had nothing to do with music. I did not envision music as an application when we started making these things. We had a lot of other ideas, yes, but that wasn't one of them. And then my associate, Adam Bergman, was the guitarist, and he came along and said, let's try it in music. And that's a great example, because it's just something that everybody recognizes, and many, many people would be interested in it. And it provides the credibility that I mentioned earlier. But as I said before, the iceberg is pretty big, and we are working on all sorts of things in the research lab, looking for other options. And probably the early ones will be amplifiers and other audio, possibly even in cell phones and that sort of thing. And it also can be played, doesn't have to be a guitar, it can be an electric piano or a flute or bass guitar, etc., that have been tried out. So that'll be the initial market for expansion. And then we hope, looking at some other bits of science in the lab, we'll find something else that is possibly much broader. I mean, you know, obviously you're big into cell phones in the world, so if you can have an impact on that, you have a very large collection of people interested in it.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. It'll be interesting to see what the response is when you go to the trade show in Nashville.
Yeah, I'm interested too. They're taking 15 of our pedals and 50 of our little parts, and we're going to hopefully find some interested artists as well as builders.
Thank you very much.
Okay.